Hi, this is John McEwen. We're on the Americana Music Show, but Ruthie, this isn't really for the Americana Music Show, though, is it?
No, it's for the holidays to welcome Ileana and her show to syndicatednews.net.
Here we go.
And make sure you tell people that it's on the front page, front and center. They go to syndicatednews.net and they can see Easy to Assemble with Ileana Douglas.
Okay. Damn it, I'm usually good on the first take. Hi, this is John McEwen welcoming Ileana Douglas to syndicatednews.net, where you can find her show Easy to Assemble. Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
So come in, Rangoon. Come in, Rangoon. What movie is that from?
I'm going to say Clark Gable.
Well, I understand you're a movie buff. Are you like historical movies?
I am. I normally am. Come in, Rangoon. I don't know. Run Silent, Run Deep. I'm just guessing now.
Oh, it's way before our time, I'd be glad to say. How long have you been doing this, Ileana?
Well, my first movie was New York Stories, so that was around, 1988. It's like 20 years now. So, yeah.
I'm just curious. Growing up in Massachusetts, did it have any effect on you with a politician family that you grew up in, political family that you grew up in? Was John Adams somebody that you talked about at dinner, or what was that like?
A little bit. I mean, you know, we couldn't talk about Richard Nixon. We were forbidden. We could never. He was considered a bad guy, But, yeah, I came from a pretty liberal, I would say very rebellious family. Mm-hmm. We were kind of semi-hippies, and we had a lot of college kids around and people like that. So politics of the day were very much discussed.
Sounds like a very lively dinner table might have happened.
Oh, it was lively, all right. There'll be a movie in that someday just about my wonderfully crazy childhood, but it was very I was always very rebellious and disliked authority, and I'm always for the underdog, and I'm always fighting the good fight, and you know, believe in work, you know, for the workers and common man. That's what the show, the Easy to Assemble show, is a lot sort of spotlights people who work for a living, blue collar workers, which I've always sort of appreciated. And that's my family.
Well, if somebody didn't know, and hopefully we're reaching a lot of people that don't know Easy to Assemble, is it comedy, a drama? Is it a drama? Is it about people suffering or laughing?
It's most definitely a comedy. The premise is that it takes place here in, it's called Easy to Assemble, and it's sponsored by IKEA. And the premise is that I play myself, Ileana Douglas, an actress who's fed up with show business, and I go to work at my local IKEA in Burbank. And then what happens is that my best friend, actress Justine Bateman, comes to visit me there, and she decides that this would be a really great place to start an internet talk show because they've got all the furniture there. And so she starts this internet talk show there called 40 and Bitter, and it kind of takes off and becomes a big hit, and then which forces me and my work there, it forces me to kind of compete in show business. So all the things I was trying to escape from show business, I can't escape anymore because now she's brought show business into IKEA. So then they force me to, I have to compete against her for coworker of the year. So it's all these things of me. It's like a reverse Lucy. Like, I'm trying to get out of show business, but I can't seem to escape being an actress or being in Hollywood.
Well, you had a lively dinner table as you were growing up. Did you make your family laugh? Did you make your family laugh? Were there good times like that?
I tried to. We were very competitive. I know that now when my family sees the show, a lot of things get pulled up from things I was doing as a kid, or oftentimes if I need costumes, I call my mom, you know, to go to the comedy trunk in the attic to to send me costumes of things that I wore as a kid. So I think a lot of things that I was experimenting on as a kid, I've brought into the show. I mean, for instance, we have a sequence this year where this season, we've been doing the show for three seasons, but this year, the show fictionally takes place in Sweden, and I meet a Swedish god named Nacken, and I dressed him with all clothes that I, you know, top hat and tails, and things that I had as a kid, and that was something that we had perfected, this idea of filming things of people sort of standing on water by just putting a step ladder slightly underneath the water. And I pulled out that trick for our show this year. And so lots of times my family says to me, God, you're still doing things that you were doing as a kid and putting
but
it over on everybody.
It sounds like it was a friendly family to grow up in, and they're just commenting on it. It sounds like it was a, unlike many comedians who build their entire career on phrases like, oh, Thanksgiving, that's when the family gets together to remember how much they hate each other. It's
right.
not that type of family.
No, we really were always like, if you, you know, I mean, my grandfather was Melvin Douglas, and so, you know, again, like there was a great probably sense of theatricality in the family. We all kind of experimented playing musical instruments and painting. And this was a very artistic family. So we were always, you know, free expression and putting on little plays and things like that for the family was encouraged.
My friend Kevin Nealon, who you probably know of,
Yes, of course.
He says one of his problems of being a comedian is he came from a functional family. You know, and I've spent time around his family, and they all get along like they're just a bunch of friends, and it's almost like a class reunion when they get together. They're very nice, but Kevin makes it work. Bill Cosby made it work, kind of the family thing in a good way. Is that a direction? Is that a direction for you? Are you a Cosby fan?
You know, it might be. You know, I actually read Kevin's book about becoming a new father, and he is from Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
That's my little plug for him, which he did that very funny book, which is called, I think it's called You're Pregnant, But What About Me?
Yeah,
and it's a very funny book. And he's from Connecticut. And I related to it very much, that kind of East Coast, you know, sensibility that, we all hung out as a family. We all, you know, rode our bikes together, and people in the neighborhood, we'd go to the movies together, and we'd all hang out. And everybody, as I recall, in my family was funny. Like on both sides, everybody was funny.
Well, they must have been. They must have been shocked when they saw you, with all that knowledge of you being funny and having a good time. Here you are in Cape Fear.
Yeah, well, things like that. I know that they're, but it's almost as if they didn't like. They're not surprised. Although they've been, they're happy about the things. I mean, my mom is the most happy if she is a fan of someone, like, for instance, I was promoting Easy to Assemble last week on the Joy Behar show, so that my mom was thrilled because she's a big Joy Behar fan. Or if I'm doing a movie with somebody, you know, like Kevin Pollak or Greg Grunberg or any of the people that I've worked with, she knows all about them. I got my mom a subscription to Variety because I can't bear to read it, but I like for my mom to read it, and then she can tell me everything that's going on in show business through a nicer filter.
Yeah. So did you feel at some particular age where you walked out on the stage or something where you went, this is it? Was there an age like 12, a school play or something where you just went, I'm not going to work for a living. I'm going to do this.
I always was, I think that, you know, for me, it started really with probably, you know, reading and listening to music. We had a lot of people around in our house that played music and that were funny and that were entertaining. And I it started for me by reading a lot and by writing. And when I was in school,
what grade?
I remember primarily around, you know, third to fifth grade, just really getting into, writing and doing things at school. And I had friends at school, and we started putting on, you know, our own, like, little mini productions. I mean, you know, reenacting the Greek myths and just, like, crazy. And luckily for us, the school let us do it, you know. We made murals, and I remember the one that's the most sort of famous that everybody talked about is that I made it's a little bit like Rushmore, but I created a slideshow using music and interviews, about air pollution. So I interviewed people, I had slides, I had this like multi, you know, like slideshow, and I invited everybody to watch it, you know, in the school auditorium.
How old were you for that?
I mean, I think it's embarrassing. I think I was in like third grade or something. I went around I interviewed all these teachers, you know, with my little tape recorder, and then I had the slideshow, and then I think the only way I had made it multimedia was I think I had to play the record. I think I had to be like a DJ going from one song to another, I don't know, some crazy thing, so that I could combine all three. I wasn't sophisticated enough to like know how to mix everything together, but
so did you have like did you have an agent that was like in sixth grade or something?
I always remembered that I did enjoy having them. You know, once I got my GE tape recorder, that really changed everything for me, because then I had the ability to interview people and tell stories. And so I think that I kind of got into acting backwards, because what I wanted to really be was probably a writer and a director, but that seemed like it was very difficult. And then I kind of started doing acting and stand-up comedy and things like that.
Well, wasn't one of your early want-to-bes, I'm guessing it was around, well, I don't even know what year, 22 or 23, where you just wish you could be on Seinfeld at one point?
Absolutely. Yeah, most of my things have been, you know, just, it's like if there's a will, there's a way. I mean, like, I will, I wanted to be on the Seinfeld show. I thought it was the greatest show ever. And so I did end up, I was on one of the last 10 shows of Seinfeld.
So what was that span of time between wanting to be on it when you actually got on?
Well, a long time. I mean, you know, from when the show was first on, and I don't remember how long the show is on, but I'm going to guess like 6-7 years or something. But, you know, I mean, what I'd started out wanting to do was to, you know, wanting to write comedy. And so now with the show, getting to, you know, I mean, and I love acting. Don't get me wrong. Acting is a blast, and I love making movies. But what I really love doing mostly is writing and producing my own, you know, my own stuff. It's much more, you know, I can obviously have much more say in what I want to do and who I want to cast and what kind of music I want to use, et cetera.
Was there any feeling when you did Seinfeld, like, there, I did it, and you know, a couple weeks later, did it wear off, and you kind of went, well, I was on it, but I sure wished I would have produced it.
Well, it always, I mean, I guess that's always the issue. It always wears off really quickly. I mean, it, when you're in, but it certainly is inspiring to get to be on a show like Seinfeld. I mean, it was the same way I did a show called The Larry Sanders Show, you know, by Gary Shandling. And, you know, I just think not to me, is one of the great shows of all time in terms
one
of
my
the
favorite
way,
one of my favorite
yeah.
Gary one of my favorite Gary Shandling lines is it's like, I'm not saying I have trouble with women, but I shave one leg so I can feel like I'm sleeping with one.
Well, that, I mean, that show and his relationship with Rip Torn,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was just so amazing. I mean, because it was sad, it was real, but it was funny all at the same time. And the characters that were on the show were so real. So I've always tried to aspire. I mean, Gary Shandling, Albert Brooks, Nicholas.
Do you ever go to the Comedy Magic Club down in Manhattan Beach?
I have not, no.
Oh, my gosh. You know, that's where Leno goes every Sunday night to try out stuff. That's where he goes to do Vegas stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like the Tonight Show with the blue light on. And Shandling goes down there sometimes to try out material. It's Comedy Magic Club in Manhattan Beach. Great food, a great room, great comedy room. And it's only, well, let's see, you're in L.A., so at 5 o'clock it would take you until the next 5 o'clock to get there. But if you left at 8, you could get there in a half hour. Well, you sound like, are you torn between being an actor and a producer? Or do they both fill the need of what you are doing equally?
I think that it's always, you know, I like being able to do both because they both have certain benefits. I mean, sometimes there's something great about just going to act in someone else's movie and not having the responsibilities of producing it. But mm-hmm. I always have found that I want to help out and I want to make it the best film I can make it. And so I find that I didn't realize like my skills as a producer, I can really help. So for instance, like I recently did a movie, they wanted me to be in the movie. And I said I would only do the movie if I could actually be one of the producers, because that way I could actually help. You know, I could use all of my training and being in the film business for 20 years to actually get some things done and make it a better movie. Because sometimes, you know, you're involved with a lot of these independent films and they go awry. So yeah. I like to be involved because I can, you know, you can actually teach people and you can help them and it can be a better film.
You like being above the line instead of below the line.
Yeah, although again, like it sounds, you know, corny, but I completely relate to below the line because you can't make a movie without a good relationship between below the line and above the line. And that's where I think that I'm very helpful because, again, being an actor for 20 years, you know how movies are made and you see where the problems are. And so part of the reason that I want to produce is, again, to bridge that. You know, so many times the crew feels outside what they call above the line of what they're making. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason that I did the web series, Easy to Assemble, was to make everybody feel a part of something and make it a success, which we've done. I mean, you know, the fact that we've been able to do a web series outside the mainstream for, you know, mm-hmm. for 4 years now, it's pretty
wow.
amazing. And I wouldn't have been able to do this without support of the crew, you know.
This is John McEwen on syndicatednews.net, and we're talking to Eliana Douglas in her wonderful career. And the above the line and below the line that has been mentioned here, for those that don't know, above the line is basically the people's names that you see on the ads, on the poster, and before the movie starts. Those are the people that when they're standing around the movie set, they go, this is the movie I'm making. Below the line are all the people that are actually making the movie. You know,
yes.
And they say, hey, this is the movie I'm working on.
Yes.
And they don't share in back end, if there is a back end ever or anymore in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
It's the structure of the business. And you've been quoted as saying, Eliana, that it's harder to make movies now. And you have some wonderful scripts, and you have wonderful ideas. You have the knowledge. You didn't just come out of film school, and you know how to make things. So Hollywood must be frustrating, especially with your grandfather. Did your grandfather ever participate in below the line, above the line situation, or was he just the actor?
No, he actually produced too. He was in the Army and World War II, and he actually did the show called Call Me Mister, which incorporated, getting talent for USO tours and for shows. And in fact, a couple of the people that he helped discover were Phil Silvers and Sid Caesar. And
wow.
He also worked in Burma with the then unknown Peter Sellers. So he's had also, interestingly, behind the scenes, a kind of understanding of, of producing and what it takes to produce.
Excuse me for interrupting, but
sure.
Did you know that when you were young? Did you know that your grandfather was more than just a guy on the other side of the lens?
I think like everybody, as you grow up and you have a lot of these traits, and then you look into your family, you start to go, well, that's very interesting. I'm doing a lot of the same things. That he did. I mean, in many ways, his path as an actor and also as a producer and also as a character actor, I find it, somewhat similar. I mean, he was involved in politics. He was involved in producing and in producing a couple of Broadway shows that, they didn't do very well, but he was involved, Call Me Mister did very well.
Mm-hmm.
But he certainly knew how to spot talent, with some of the people that he worked with in Call Me Mister.
You seem to have a respect for both sides of it, for both the actors and the people that are doing the grunt work of getting it captured on film. You don't seem to have the Hitchcock attitude of, I can't wait to get this film shot so I can get rid of these actors and finish my movie. You seem to have more of a respect for all sides of it. Do you, as a director, sometimes take comments from a music person or one of the other actors, or maybe we should shoot it this way? How do you feel about that?
It's always, it's interesting. Coming from a background of doing stand-up, you're going out there and you're telling jokes and you're kind of, you never know which ones are going to land and which ones are not going to land, and you always have to trust your instincts. And what I like to do is I don't ask people so much, well, what do you think of this? But I like to get people's opinions, because what I find is that if a lot of people tell you about one area of something that you're doing that they have a problem with, what I do is I don't so much listen to the comment, but I'm aware that there's a problem there. Like if you're editing something and five or six people point out one area and they go, you know what you should do with this? You should, put them in a balloon, or you should do this. What I oftentimes do is not so much listen to their opinions, but I understand that there's a problem there.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I write a script and a number of people say, I didn't really like that scene, or I didn't think it was funny, I don't so much argue with them, but I do understand that there's a problem there. But oftentimes you have to be very careful, I think, about leaving yourself open to what somebody else would do, because we all get very insecure. And I think that without your instincts, of knowing something, you can really, I mean, that's the one thing about a movie, which was another reason I wanted to produce, is that, being a director or an actor or anything like that, is, it's very it's very fragile. And if people start tearing you down, it's very hard to have any kind of confidence to continue. So I think that I don't let too many opinions, you know. Like, if you're going to do opinions, I mean, for instance, what I like to do on Easy to Assemble is I don't direct it because that would be too much. But, like, for, you know, but I like to work with a director who's open-minded, who, if there's, say, if there's an issue with an actor or scene that's going on, I'll pull the director aside and I'll say, you know what, why don't you suggest this or that or the other? But I would never do it publicly. I always like to let the director have the full command because, again, like when you're on a set, you don't want to show, you don't want to have the ability for too many people to start giving opinions. Because
right.
The whole, you know, the whole fragment will just suddenly fall apart. Because, like,
It starts a conversation, and I don't know. That sounds like a good idea to me. And there goes the seconds when the camera should be running, and
right.
People are debating. And
yeah.
You're right. So, Ileana,
yes.
Is this a job that you have? Do you feel like this is a job, or is this, this sounds like what you are? This is what you are, and you love your work, and it's not a job.
No, it's not a job for me. I mean, I really, you know, I feel like it's in some ways, it's a vocation, which can be a burden, because I do feel, if I can get on my soapbox for a minute, that, you know, being an artist in today's society where we don't really value artists and the environment that I grew up in, you know, we really, really valued writers, actors, musicians. It was something that, you know, was aspired to. There was a legacy. There was, like, you had to do your work. And, you know, we read books and we went to see plays and we were encouraged to do all of that stuff. And to me, you know, artists are such a vital part of our society. They have to, you know, they reflect things that are going on. And if we don't value them, it makes it very hard to write a song or paint a picture when in the back of your head you're thinking, does anybody really care about this? Does anybody, why am I really doing this? Because, you know, right now we have a society that is more interested in becoming rich and famous and powerful. That's what we've, as a society, that is what we value right now. It's almost like, I feel like if you're going to make an analogy of the Greeks and Romans, we're the Romans. Like, we're in a Roman society. We seem to value money and power and celebrity. And like,
was it for you? Is that you you're describing?
No, I mean, that's, I think of myself more as someone who's an artist who has to understand and accept that there are certain sacrifices with that vocation, because you're not, we're not going to have the acceptance that I used to have even when I started out. You know what I mean? I had teachers that were very, you know, acting teachers that were very serious about, you know, the learning of your craft, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And we just don't really have that anymore. But yet, in spite of that, what keeps me going is the fans and the fan support and, you know, and the absolute belief that that if you think you have a point of view, that you, in some way, you have a responsibility to maintain that, and
I know what you
have
mean.
To keep it up.
I know what you mean. I feel like I work for the people. I work for the people in front of the stage. I'm a musician and performer and do about 110 cities a year, and I don't sit around my house playing the songs that I'm going to play in front on the stage somewhere, but I try and find things. Oh, maybe this will make somebody go, wow, what was that? Or make them laugh or make them do something. I work for them. Because right now,
exactly.
I don't have a job. I don't have a job. I don't get up at 8 and go to work and come home at 7 or whatever. So, and the actor job is Well, it's a tough field. Surprising mm-hmm. that you are doing so well, but it's because you've diversified. I was at Whole Foods on Coldwater,
mm-hmm.
and I was down there. There were about five people behind me. And for those that are listening, this is a hip grocery store that's in North Hollywood. And the girl checking me out kept looking up at me. And after looking up about the fifth time, she says to me, "Are you an actor?" And there's five people in line right behind me. And I said, "No, I have a job." And everybody cracked up because I'm in North Hollywood, and they heard her, and they heard the answer. Because if you're an actor, it's most likely you don't have a job, 95% of them.
Yes, because I think, it's your responsibility to not give up. I mean that quite seriously, because if you can't give up, you know, you can't, because if you give up, then there has to be a mental decision made somewhere along the way that I'm going to do this, even if I have no audience, even if I'm just doing this in my house. I'm serious. Like I tell people that want to be an actor and that even if you don't have a job, you should get up and pretend you have a job. You should get up and watch a film or get together with your friends and play music or do something that's like that, because, you know, if you're going to, it will lead to something. I mean, you know, I was getting together, you know, we didn't have enough money on the show to pay for music. And so I got some, you know, so a lot of the guys that were in the show were musicians and they'd been in bands. And so we got together and we started, you know, what if we did music that was like, let's make up like we're like the Swedish Monkeys. Like, what would music sound like if we were a Swedish pop band from the 1970s? And we did like, and we all, you know, grew up with like reading albums and what all that stuff was like. So we came up with this fictional group, you know, called Sparhusen, that were, you know, a folk and roll group out of Sweden and all sorts of, you know, what their experience was like. And what started out as a joke, you know, we were writing these songs and they were sort of funny and it turned into a real thing. And then we were really a band and we were really playing music and we started getting better and better. And that's how things go, you know? So my advice to people is always just to do it.
Do you think ahead, like what is Eliana Douglas going to be doing in 3 years or 4 years? Now, let me interject first that it's used to be a common formula that if anybody had an idea for a movie, hey, I got an idea for a movie, and you start writing a script, it's going to take at least 7 years to get it made. And I understand you have several scripts or a couple that you would like mm-hmm. to get made, and one of them's in its fifth year. And so what do you see ahead as Easy to Assemble grows in popularity, and maybe something happens to where you can do what you want to do at a higher level?
Well, I mean, obviously, in addition to getting financing through the traditional methods, you know,
begging?
Yeah, you know, you're right. I mean, there's projects aside from begging. There's projects that I'm, you know, developing with other writers, and you're trying to go mm-hmm. through all those avenues. I do see. I mean, that's why my experience with IKEA has been such an amazing example of a brand that has been essentially financing, you know, my vision. And there's no reason why they're, you know, where people can, you know, could potentially develop relationships with brands to do films or to do projects. That's number one. You know, number two, I see the web and YouTube and Facebook as the future in which we can, you know, maintain control of our own channel and put our own, you know, stuff on there and ask fans, you know, eventually, if they want to support you and contribute, you know, or at least, I mean, for somebody who tours, Facebook and YouTube are these just fantastic avenues where you can create your own touring model.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I'm, you know, that's something that for our show I'm very interested in doing as a touring, you know, comedy show. But that's where I really see, you know, until the economy bounces back, I see the future of funding coming from doing lower budget films, which is, you know, what I do now, which is you do these movies that are under $1 million. And that's, and you just, you have to do them because that's what the, you know, that's currently what the budget is. But I think that maintaining the relationship with the fans is going to be the future.
Do you feel like you're rewarded by street recognition or annoyed by it?
Oh, no, it's always, it's, you know, it's always what keeps me going because, you know, you do, I mean, the part doing the Easy to Assemble show has been so rewarding because, you know, of the relationship, not only with the fans, but again, the relationship, you know, with the major brand to keep supporting the show. So, you know, obviously there's, you know, that validity for me has been really important both as a writer and as a producer, to make me feel that, you know, well, okay, I guess I should keep doing this then, you know.
But do you get
do you get that
recognition that is sometimes annoying to some, and sometimes some people go, oh, thank goodness they recognize me. Like, do people ask you for your autographs when you're just out walking around, or is it when you're around the set? You know the difference that I mean? You're recognizable. Do you feel like you want to be more? Do you want to just be more successful?
The fan support has always been such a major component of my career that I'm fine with it. I mean, some of the best experiences I've had, I mean, because I always feel I'm a fan too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do a lot of work for Turner Classic Movies when they do the Turner Classic Movies, the film festivals, and I'm introducing films. I mean, I relate to the fans. I feel the same. I mean, I get really excited. I mean, when I saw Jean-Paul Belmondo, I mean, I nearly had a heart attack. I was really excited when I saw Jean-Paul Belmondo.
Uh-huh.
So I understand the, you know, the excitement and the enthusiasm from seeing people who do the movies. It's very exciting. It's exciting to me.
Almost everything you've said refers to making something for capturing the video image on film or in a medium. Do you have a preference about, I mean, TV is more immediate, especially your show Easy to Assemble. It's like right now. Do you like the film aspect, or do you like TV?
Well, just for me personally, I think the experience of being in a film or the theater, you know, when you're with a group of people watching a film, cannot be duplicated. It's just a very special experience. But what I like about TV, obviously, is the immediacy of TV and the fact that you can interact with people. So when people are watching Easy to Assemble and then I get the comments from the fans and I'm actually able to interact with everybody on Facebook, that's, you know, that's enjoyable too. It's a more personal, I think, you know, TV is obviously, it's more intimate, but I do think of films as very special.
And what about stand-up?
Well, stand-up, I did very briefly because I just thought it was a really scary way to make a living. But I enjoy doing comic writing, but I'm planning on going back and doing some more stand-up. And as we head into season 4 of Easy to Assemble, I'm going to start incorporating some of my stand-up into the show. So that ought to be interesting. So I'll get to, we'll see what people think of my stand-up, my IKEA jokes.
It sounds like you want to get scared again. be put on the edge. Be put on the front of, is this going to work? It sounds like you don't like to get too comfortable. You don't want to do the same thing over and over. You want to do the music group for a little while, and then this TV show that's starting out with the career that was, like you said, have been quoted as saying, I started at the top and you're working your way down.
Yes.
Working with people like that, where you were calling them Marty and Bobby, is quite a high level to step into. And did that motivate you to be more of an actress? Ileana Douglas on syndicatednews.net, you know, when you start off in a career where you're working with Martin Scorsese and Robert De Niro, people that were calling each other Bobby and Marty, and all of a sudden you're there at the beginning. Was that exciting to you, and is it headed the way you dreamt of?
It certainly was exciting, because just that, I mean, that experience was, I think that, again, you know, when you're young, I never intended on not making it, you know, so there's an interesting feeling when you are doing these movies, and you always picture yourself doing these movies, and then you actually are, and then there's a kind of a scary feeling about that you have to live up to certain expectations. But I would say I remember working on Cape Fear and working with Marty and the writer, Wesley Strick, and he said, you know, you have more rewrites than De Niro. So I was
What does that mean?
It meant that I had, you know, that once I got the part and I read the script, I had all these ideas and changes that I wanted to make to personalize my character. And, you know, that came out of me just maybe being an experience and thinking that, well, oh, don't you, I assumed, like, coming out of acting school, well, that's what they want. They want you to contribute and make it your own. And luckily for me, Marty really encouraged me and gave me confidence in terms of my own, you know, writing skill. So he always, you know, in terms of Cape Fear, they, you know, he really let me have a free hand in interpreting the character. And
nice.
So then when I, yeah, so I, when, you know, both in Goodfellas and in To Die For, and he also really encouraged me as a, you know, to do more writing and producing and directing. And then my acting career took off, and it took a while to kind of get back to be able to try to do both. And then, but, you know, starting out and having a career and then maintaining a career are two different things. And like you said, you do have to diversify in order to maintain a career.
Ileana,
just
before we leave, I've taken a lot of your time, and I really appreciate it. People like to get to know you. And I think you've got one of those backgrounds that's admirable. You haven't just waited for the phone to ring. And I'm just curious, is it a surprise to you sitting in Hollywood that, I mean, could you say that this whole thing started with a scream, or has that been overstated? You screamed your way into show business?
I was going to get in somehow. I think it was asked at the, you know, at the time that it happened, because it's true. I was working for a film publicist, and I did get hired to dub screams for The Last Temptation of Christ, and that's how I met Martin Scorsese, and then we started working together and had a relationship together. And so, you know, if things may have started with a scream, it was going to be that or the other. I mean, there was, you know, as I said before, I think that when you're starting out, you know, I mean, I knew that somehow I wanted to be in movies and I wanted to make movies. And that's all I knew. I didn't quite know how I was going to accomplish that.
Well, it sounds like you're keeping it going. And I hope that script that you have, is it in that position? Is it something you're still interested in? A film idea that you had of your own?
Very much so.
I read,
There's, yeah.
And I'm not going to ask you about it because it's Hollywood.
That's true.
It's interesting, so I won't ask you about it. But in case anybody, if there's an angel out there listening that has followed this lady and knows how clever she is and determined to succeed, you should listen to her script idea because I bet it's a good one. And
yeah.
I want to be an associate producer if the money comes up. I love the titles on Main Street, the David Mamet. An entire list of associate producers can be found on the website.
Yeah.
And anyway, Ileana, I appreciate the time you spent with us.
Please go to our Easy to Assemble YouTube page and subscribe. And you can follow me on at Ileana Rama or at Easy to Assemble, and also Easy to Assemble on Facebook. And you can see all sorts of, pictures and behind-the-scenes things and kind of follow me and what I'm doing. And also, we also are the first web series that has our own soundtrack. So the soundtrack for Finding North is on iTunes. There's a lot of, really, really interesting Swedish folk music, which I became really interested in by doing the show. And there's some fantastic artists on on the album. So people might really be interested in checking out that kind of music, too.
Yeah, that's a good thing to do. And
Well,
I'd like to say we're proud of Syndicated News to let you know that your show is being promoted on other aspects of syndicatednews.net, and so people will be led to it. And I hope as this site grows, so does your show. And I'm wishing you well.
Oh, thank you. So it's a thrill. I'm so glad that you guys like us and support us. And I've been enjoying watching our growing fan base.
Yeah, that's very cool. We've been listening to Ileana Douglas talk about everything from Easy to Assemble, her new show, well, still new, what she's done and going to do. Thanks for being with us, Ileana.
Thank you. Hi, this is Ileana Douglas, and you're listening to syndicatednews.net.